It is the Doomsday Podcast, a special training camp edition with Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, and we come to you live from Frito Nation Productions out in, far north Dallas.
Very far.
Very, very far north Dallas, and we've had issues getting here tonight, but we're here.
You've had more false start penalties at the start of this show than Flozell Adams in his career.
Poor Flozell. Let's give him some grace. He had, as Jerry said,
grace.
Today,
the word of the day.
Let's give him grace. He had a hearing issue, and it would crop up every now and then. It is.
You just have a listening issue.
I have all of that. I started to say it's a Matt Mosley show. I do have a show. 3 to 6, ESPN Central Texas. You should listen. But this is the Doomsday Podcast, and we are back together. We are in a studio together. It's fun. We've done this maybe one other time during the pandemic. We're all social distance, in case you're worried about that. We're doing our best on all those fronts. And so are the Cowboys. They're going to social distance from us like crazy. In fact, it's only through like the magic of a conference call that we were able to have the State of the Union. I mean, Ed, we'll get into what was said today. I mean, I think it bears... mentioned that you and I are used to, and you've been there for the start of it. Sometimes you come in a little later. I've been there for the whole time at times, you know, when I was with the morning news and ESPN.com.
I love how you talk about your former employers.
Being in, yeah, there's a lot more of them. Fox, I could keep going. I'd like to have some future ones.
I thought one of the unique features was going to be that our producer here, Frito, was going to work in some of these new sound effects. There we go. Like we were doing it before a studio audience.
Frito has like a new Rodecaster Pro mixer board, so this is going to be fun. I've lost my voice today. After all, I've had great health. My voice has been fine.
Today, your listeners have been waiting for.
Yeah, today kind of...
I mean, we probably were waiting for that longer than we've been waiting for Jerry Jones to address these issues of social unrest and players kneeling and protesting at the national anthem. We've been waiting for you to lose your voice longer than we've been waiting for Jerry to use his.
That's a fair point. I thought today a question, and I thought about asking it, but of course, I just sort of was granted access to be on all these calls, but I thought it might have been kind of funny. After he said all that, I was just going to go, Jerry, is that your statement? What you just said on all that grace about George Floyd, does that count? Is that what it is? I don't know if he would have appreciated that. But and I love the fact that, is there any more? Where I was getting a minute ago, by the way, is that Oxnard, California, I do miss it.
Ugh.
I miss the, you and I going to Andrea's.
Fish sandwiches.
The
cool breezes.
Mahi-mahi.
Another sound effect.
Do that evil one. I like that scary.
He doesn't remember where they are.
Is that it? Oh my gosh, this is really good. Are we using any of this? What we just talked about? No, but I do miss that. What's that bar where you used to go to? Out by where you could walk out the back and be in the.
You have to
beach.
Walk out the back.
You have.
You're advised to walk out the back.
Boy, old Ian like that Rudder Room. I can't do Ian's voice right now. Ian Fitzsimmons.
I think you were talking about
AM radio.
The new era, the COVID era, and the restrictions on the media, and how we have to gather our information through these conference calls now rather than sitting in the audience with the coaches and Jerry and then getting them off to the side and interviewing whatever players we want.
I find it easier this way.
I'm sure you do. I find it enormously frustrating that everybody essentially has the same information. There's no pulling somebody off to the side or going up to a player who's not, interviewing with somebody in a locker room or, waiting a few extra minutes for Dak or Zeke or whatever.
But now I'm not saying you haven't accomplished those things for years, but don't sell yourself short. You have a multitude of sources that you can text and all that. So you're going to be just fine.
But you can only do that so many times. There has to be something significant to cause me to text some of the more prominent people in the Cowboys organization.
Here was I've never known you to have anything hold you up from texting anybody. Today, here was my schedule. I know everybody's wanting to hear this. 11 a.m., Bob Bowlsby, Big 12, 11 a.m. also, Jerry Jones, 11:30, Dave Aranda, the Baylor coach, 12, Dak. And I tried to like be at all these different places, and it ended up horrible because it ended up horribly because I couldn't, like, when I would jump on these other things, I wouldn't know what had been asked. You know how that is when you show up to something late?
I'm not as familiar with that as you are. I mean, that's a way of life for you. Like, you walk into a room and the thing's half over every time. So you ought to be used to this.
Yeah, I think that's fair as well. But today I was really trying my best to be there on all fronts. And I just didn't really, like, even the whole time.
In fact, I showed up here tonight in the parking lot, and as soon as I got here, I got a text from you saying you're stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic.
But you at least found out that it was like a horrible wreck, and they shut down the entire highway.
If it wasn't that, it would have been something else. That's just what it was this time.
I think I've been really on point lately. It is the Doomsday Podcast as we continue on down this path. Good to see you, Ed. You're looking good during the pandemic. You've maintained strong. I think part of it is these trips to Colorado renew you. You look younger all the time.
I think it's my Peloton.
Are you 60 yet or not?
Yeah, I just turned 60.
What day?
May 3rd.
Did we celebrate?
Of course not.
If I ever.
Of course not.
Yeah, I don't
know.
There was
no acknowledgement of it by anyone.
I think maybe I did see.
You know what? Today, actually, now that we're talking about me, which quite honestly I prefer, and we are going to get to the Cowboys and what they did today at some point, I think. Even play some of the interviews. But back to me for a moment. Today's a historic day for me, actually.
Yeah.
In my professional career. It was a year ago today, live from Oxnard, I returned on the air to ESPN.
Live on the air. Did we break that news on the Doomsday Podcast, or did you just come straight back on ESPN? I can't remember how we handled that. Or did you tweet it out?
I think Peter King may have broken the story.
I really think...
Good friend of mine.
I still think the timing on all
this...
Being
my friend sometimes has benefits. You've experienced very few to this point. You were hopeful you were going to get one on Friday.
I still need to relocate to... I was hoping to see a Cowboys practice, but I really don't want to do a bunch of testing to get there.
No, they're not doing the testing anymore.
We don't have to do testing?
There's no testing because there's no direct contact.
Oh.
So at one point, the Cowboys were going to require media people to get two COVID tests and pass both.
So that
both
they could come do the interviews.
Because Mike McCarthy was going to be available face-to-face, socially distant.
So they're not going to do that anymore.
So now everything's going to be done in these conference calls, these WebEx.
Those things are going really well.
There's a lot of competition to get your question asked.
I know, and people...
And there's not much interest on the other end in answering the question.
No, and by the way, People are a little bit too into, I've got to have my question. I've got to have my voice out there. For once, I just kind of sat there today, and I was like, I really don't want to compete. I really don't want to try. How about that one time? Some poor woman, I don't want to mention anybody's name, tried to get a question in like seven different times. And then try talking over Brad Sham. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Why did you have to bring in the voice of the Cowboys?
I don't know.
Why could you pick somebody else?
Raise your eyebrows.
Was there not anybody else you could have admonished?
Lord and Savior. No, it's fine. I love his culottes. All right, let's talk about some of the things Jerry had to say today. And before we hear it, we'll hear from Jerry in some of his comments on racial injustice, some of the social issues out there. He never really... You know, it's funny, Jerry has a way, and you've been around him for years, of talking all around things. The only time he ever came close to sort of giving an explanation for, like, why he never gave a response when even Don Terry Poe and Gerald McCoy were asking him to, and say they were new. They didn't even know him. They're just new to the organization. They're like, yeah, we wish our owner had our back. We wish he'd stay. He said something today that was kind of interesting. He says, it's almost kind of like he's talking to us that know him really well. Like, guys, I don't, every time you need me, I don't pop up. I don't just pop up out of, y'all know that about me. So, and I think in some way he was trying to say, I'm not just going to talk anytime everybody thinks I should talk or whatever. And I think he
was going to talk in his own time. He wasn't going to be pressured into it, which made, I think, a lot of people think that either he was going to maintain the position he stated 3 years ago when he basically... He delivered an ultimatum. He threatened his players with punishment if they didn't honor the flag in his mind by you know, standing toe to toe, as he called it. And
Steven
then
backed that up. You remember? I mean, yeah, I think Steven said
he didn't back it up, and he even went so far as to say it was written, that this is a written policy that they have, as if the players, when they sign their contracts, have agreed to do this. Obviously, they found a way around it in the Arizona game, and they knelt first, and then they all stood shoulder to shoulder like Jerry wanted. It's interesting. I mean, you're coming off a $250 million yacht, so I'm not sure you're the right guy to talk about police brutality and social injustice to begin with. And I think everybody knew that maybe he was trying to avoid this because his position is unchanged and now more unpopular than it was 3 years ago. And he wasn't going to change it because he didn't want to back down, or because that's what he believes. And I think, and Jerry said one of the first things he said when he addressed this, and remember, he's speaking for the first time in 109 days. I don't know if since Jerry's been born, he went 109 days without talking. And I mean from inception. Like, I think he was speaking in the womb.
Yeah.
And he hadn't gone 109 days without talking to the public since he's been the owner of this franchise, I'm pretty sure. So he did it on his own terms, and I respect that. I respect that he wasn't going to be forced into saying something he didn't want to say.
Although all he had to say, I get what you're saying, but he didn't even have to say anything about kneeling or the anthem or any of that.
He knew that was the first thing he was going to be asked.
I'm talking about going that long without making a statement. All he had to do is come out and go, "I'm horrified by what I saw with George Floyd, and I support my players now more than ever." He didn't have to.
That wasn't going to be enough.
He didn't have to take some huge stand. Yes, it was. Most of those owners said barely anything. I think it would have been plenty. I think the players would have been like, "Thank you. Thank you for speaking up." And he would have been okay. I don't think he had to play. I don't think he had to say anything about kneeling. I mean, I think
he does
Drew
have
Brees
to, he does
found
have
out
to.
You don't have to. Yeah, oh my gosh, I've just been canceled by America. Jerry could have said one thing. I hate what I saw, and I stand with my players. That's really all he had to say.
Okay, well, what if your players kneel? Do you kneel with your players?
Well, he didn't have to address that yet.
He doesn't feel that way. The first thing he said today was, I respect the flag. I feel a certain way about the flag. He basically, if Drew Brees hadn't gone through what Drew Brees went through, I think we'd have heard something a little bit different from Jerry today. If you don't think Jerry learned from what happened to Drew Brees, then I think you're being.
I don't even think Jerry had to get into the kneeling back.
He
then.
Does. He went. You can't no. say what he said the last time 3 years
I
ago
know.
When it was an issue,
talking,
and then pretend you're not going to speak
I'm
to it now.
About in the aftermath of George Floyd, he didn't have to come out and talk about kneeling right then. That was not even what he had to do. He simply had to say, "I got my players back. I hate what's going on in our country, and Black Lives Matter."
You know what he had to say? He didn't have to say anything. That's what he said.
Well, that's what he did. I'm just saying. I mean,
that's the path he chose.
Okay.
But he knew when he did speak, he was going to, that was going to be the focus of the address. And that's why his first answer was 6 minutes long. And it was interesting that he's a very polarizing figure in sports, and he really didn't give a sharp opinion of his position. I thought he was sort of like very moderate and trying to say, "Hey, let's everybody stop and let's think about what the other side is saying, and let's try and find some middle ground here."
Which you're not allowed to do in this country.
I mean, it's frowned upon.
I did admire that part of it because, in a sense, he was saying, "I'm going to give my players grace that maybe I didn't. Maybe that wasn't in my heart, or maybe I was such a hardline stance. We're threatening to basically kick them off the team if they kneel. So I've softened that." But he's also giving grace to the people who are highly offended, whether that be fans or whoever, by people that kneel. So you're right. Maybe he is the great uniter.
Well, I think he couldn't maintain the same position and articulate it the same way as he did 3 years ago. I presume part of that would be because maybe some of the sponsors who felt a certain way before aren't as hardline in that regard now. And maybe even more importantly, that he couldn't get away with it with his most prominent players now like he could back then. Because back then, Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott were very early in their careers. They weren't going to defy their owner. They weren't going to put their owner in a bad position publicly But they might now.
Yeah.
I'd say they're more inclined to do it now. I mean, Dak Prescott just pledged $1 million to social justice causes this year, this offseason, and just wrote a letter to the Oklahoma governor trying to get a death row inmate pardoned. So I don't think Jerry can come out and say, you're going to stand at attention because I say you're going to stand at attention or we're going to deactivate you. And oh, by the way, it's just a bunch of rhetoric anyway. Did you watch Michael Bennett during the national anthem at all last year?
Yeah.
I watched him whenever he came here. I watched him every national anthem after that. He never once stood on the line. He always went back to the back of the bench, over by the trash cans, interacted with people, drank Gatorade.
They chose not to.
That's what he did.
They chose not to acknowledge that or even mention it.
They never made an issue of it. And wisely so.
And Michael Bennett has retired from football and has written a book or something now. Let's listen into some of what we were talking about. Here is Jerry Jones talking about what became a theme of this news conference, the word grace. Things almost became biblical.
The key word about your question, David, is a word called grace. Grace. That was then, 2 years ago. This is now. We have had very, very sensitive times. I don't need to share that we're also embroiled in a very other sensitive time with the challenge and the war, literally, we're on with the virus. These are very sensitive times. I have nothing to prove as far as where I'm standing with the flag and where the Cowboys stand. I have nothing to prove regarding my players and my support of our players. What I do want to show and want us all to be a part of is a word called grace. Grace. Not only grace in our actions, but grace in our understanding where they're coming from. I want our players to understand the perception and where they're coming from regarding the flag and the sensitivity there and the many memories there. And I want our fans to understand and better do because of what's gone on over the last few months. And want them to understand where our players are coming from there. And they do not feel like that the ones that want to basically do that, kneel, they do not feel like they're dishonoring the flag. I'm going to have grace. I've had grace. Many of you have written and criticized me for having too much grace and understanding regarding our players, and I probably have. And I'm going to have grace regarding the people that are sensitive about our flag. Somewhere in between there as the weeks, as we get together with our team, as we discuss with the team, somewhere in between there is how we're going to handle it.
All right, yeah, there's Jerry. And I thought it was, especially for a WebEx, we've seen Jerry, and sometimes he's been coming off surgeries, and sometimes it's always interesting. You know, he said some famous things. The glory hole comes to mind. He said some very infamous.
Something about the anatomy of an insect.
Correct. I remember some of that. I thought today, and maybe it was because of kind of what you're talking about, he was just trying to strike the right tone in his mind. He knew he hadn't said anything and needed to address, and he knew he was going to be asked about these things. And I like the fact that we're told, by the way, make sure you ask your questions, speak very distinctly and with a lot of clarity, and given the way that WebEx goes, you can't, you know, like all the, everybody's like, okay, what did that person say? And yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. But, I thought Jerry, I don't want to say he sounded lucid, which he did, but he was, he struck a, I just
conciliatory tone, a moderate
conciliatory tone. but just really stayed on point. I mean, he can kind of get all over the place, and you can
tell he may have been
message.
Coached. I believe in the past 109 days, Jerry may have been coached and prepared well for his first conversation about these very sensitive topics.
Well, he performed pretty well. I thought he did. And
well, he didn't back down. He didn't say, "Hey, I've totally changed my position on this whole thing." He just said he'd listen to his players, and nobody should question whether he supports his players. And I don't think anybody does. But at the same time, he made it very clear that he still feels the way he did before, to a certain point, about honoring and respecting the flag. That to him, and I think that's personally an important issue to him. It's not just something he's doing for the sake of business.
Yeah, he said he had those things. He said, "I've got nothing to prove. I've got nothing to prove." And I think you and I both made this point at some point during the silence that he was somewhat criticized by some people. That was kind of at the heart of him not speaking, is because in his mind, by his actions over the years and the way he's treated his players and been a father figure to a lot of folks especially players of color, I think in his mind, hey, I've walked the walk, so I shouldn't have to come out and make a bunch of statements.
And I also don't think he feels the need to respond to Gerald McCoy and Donatari Poe before they've snapped their chin straps on even one time. Like, he just gave these guys millions of dollars, and now they're going to tell him how to behave? I don't think so.
Well, that may have been what he was thinking, although, you know, then part of me admires them because it's like they've never even met him, and they're just like, I'm just going to go ahead and come out and criticize the guy. I don't know what it says, because the Marcus Lawrence basically said, no, Jerry can do whatever he wants. So the players that were already on the team that sort of know Jerry didn't say a peep.
And I don't know if we're finishing this point or we're going to continue on with for a while, but you know, Dak Prescott also did a press conference today after Jerry, Steven, and Mike McCarthy. Do people remember Mike McCarthy's the head coach now? I don't know.
Maybe how much did we hear from him today?
Not a whole lot.
6 minutes.
But I thought Dak also made the point that this is a topic of conversation on an increasing basis among the players as they try to resolve what it is they want to do as a group to express their point of view in this regard, that they haven't decided yet. They're still in the process of doing so. Dak said he would like them to do it in a very unified way, but he said he would respect somebody who chose to express themselves differently than he might do it.
Yeah, I think that's important. And you know, we live in an age right now where it's if you don't say enough, you're criticized. If you say too much, you're criticized. And Dak stepped up with his pocketbook, and not only the writing of the letter which Jerry brought up today, which you already said about Oklahoma, but the $1 million. I mean, that's no matter how much he's going to make, that's still a massive $31.4 million. That's a lot, but still, to give $1 million is a large, large commitment. Most players, and I never knock them for it, but that's just not, they're not going to get anywhere near that. All right, since you brought up Dak, let's skip to that. I want to go right to that. This is, we'll hear from Dak, and let's respond to this after he says it. This was Dak talking about his commitment and how he feels about the Cowboys.
I'm excited as hell to be a Dallas Cowboy. I've been a fan of this organization and been a fan of this program for years. I love every bit of the opportunity and the platform that I get to be the quarterback here. I love this team. I'm excited about what we have, what we can do and accomplish this year. So no frustration as far as that. Once again, I believe something will get done. And with my hopes, I believe I'll be a Dallas Cowboy for the rest of my career. So,
all right, Ed. I think he already put that out there one other time recently about how he wants to be a Cowboy for life and all of that. I think you and I don't know if it's a cynic in us or whatever, but we both agree, and even Troy Aikman brought it up, as huge a money as he's going to get for this franchise tag, if you become the first player in franchise history to or first quarterback to go on the franchise tag, you know, I think Troy's point to us was like, you can't help but think in the back of your mind, even though they tried to get it done and he didn't, the terms couldn't come together, but you can't kind of help but think. So right now, Dak's certainly saying all the things. I want to be a Cowboy for life. I don't want to be a Cowboy for life.
He should say that right up until the time he signs with somebody else.
Absolutely. And I think that's, I just wonder, is he truly going to be able, and maybe he can, I mean, I'm not wired that way. I one slight can throw my whole day off from somebody, and I, you know, and you're the same way. You get upset about things. But I'm sorry, Ed. I'll let you respond to that if you'd like. But I'm just saying, Dak may be able to compartmentalize and truly have, you know, like, I'm going to give my all, and I'm going to, and I think he is that professional kind of guy. But this has got to be in the back of his mind.
Well, Troy's point was, Dak will always question whether the organization respects him as he thinks they should, even though they offered him a lot of money. They didn't get the deal done. He's the only quarterback who didn't get their deal done, right? I mean, he's the third quarterback in NFL history to play on the franchise tag. Kirk Cousins and Drew Brees were the other ones, and both of them signed long-term deals not with their teams, but with other teams. And so if Dak does it differently, it will be a historic decision. I have no doubt he's going to be all in. That's just the way he is. He's a very competitive guy. He takes his leadership role seriously. You know, he does the work. He has more incentive than he's ever had to have a great year. And he's got arguably better talent and coaching than he's ever had to have a great year. Now, I think some of the things that have been lost to this pandemic in this offseason are very harmful to teams like the Cowboys, who made a coaching change this offseason. Fortunately for them, everybody in the division did the same thing except for the Philadelphia Eagles, who still have a Super Bowl winning coach in Doug Peterson, who, oh, by the way, isn't going to get COVID during the season because he already had it.
Yeah.
But I think the Cowboys have lost a lot of the advantages that come with hiring a first-year coach and having him install his system. And I think it's going to be very difficult, especially early in the year, for these teams that made coaching changes. But I think Dak will have a great year. Why wouldn't he? He's always played well. And now he's got, I mean, they've lost Travis Frederick. I think that's a significant loss. He got sacked a lot the one year they didn't have him. So I think that's something to look for. But having CeeDee Lamb probably, you know, he was going to learn four positions, Mike McCarthy said when they drafted him. You know, rookie, being a receiver is a tough adjustment. Other than quarterback, it's the hardest one if you talk to quarterbacks in the NFL. So he's probably not going to be the player he could have been if they'd had a full offseason. But I think Dak's going to be totally committed. He's got a lot to play for. He has leverage now. If he gets hurt or the season gets shortened, he loses
it. Yeah. I do kind of like, and let's hear in a minute from Dak on this idea of something we heard from the other day about there's a story on ESPN about the bubble, the mini bubble that has been formed at the Omni, place you and I have hung out. And
I may hang out again now.
We did. In fact, I'm going to go into the bubble, and I'm gonna stay over there. I like that restaurant, Neighborhood Services.
Yeah.
One time we
I wonder
had
what the room rate is over there.
Over at the Omni? Yeah. I don't know. I think it can get us a pretty good rate. I used to have buddies with the Omni downtown. I'll see what I can do for us. But that will be interesting. But I do find it a little bit comical that they're going to, okay, I don't know how many players are going to go into this bubble.
Dak said 90% are in now.
Okay. And maybe through training camp, but
all the way through training
camp. They're going to line up, play a team for four quarters, and there's a good chance none of these other teams have gone into a bubble. Now, what other bubble did we hear about? Did Tampa Bay talk about a bubble?
New Orleans.
Okay. I mean, is Bourbon Street their bubble? Where is their bubble? Do you know? Is
they're
it
at, a hotel? Yeah, they're somewhere? At a Weston Hotel in the French Quarter.
Is that? Do you have you ever stayed at that? Have you ever stayed at that?
I stayed
Weston?
There once or twice. Yeah.
Have you quarantined at that place?
No, I went out.
Every time I go to New Orleans, you just afterwards you want to quarantine.
And more.
That's right. Definitely.
So we're going to play the Dak Bite?
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. That was where I was headed. Yeah, this is Dak talking about life in the bubble.
As I said, for me, it's about trying to stay as safe as I can, as healthy as I can, without knowing the true future of where this season is going to go. I think it's important for us as players to try to create the biggest bubble or the smallest bubble, I guess you can say, but a bubble that we can amongst players, because as long as this season gets to play out, I think part of it, the healthiest team wins. So that's something that we've come together as leaders and taken on this option to stay in this hotel. Just as that, so we can try to stay healthy. We can all be there for each other. We can set an example for the young guys of about avoiding downtown or about avoiding the other people and where people can go. Because what's important right now is this football team, the season, and not only our health, but the health of our family. family. So I think this is the best way that we can make sure that that happens.
All right. And several other things came up. Okay, did you buy, stay with Dak
first of all, if I could go back to what Dak was talking about there. I think it's a great demonstration of leadership and commitment by the veteran players who have homes here. Like, they'd rather be at home. And instead, they've done what they could to recreate the Oxnard situation where, you know, they're sequestered in one establishment to limit their contact with, you know, people who might be asymptomatic carriers of the coronavirus, to give themselves the best chance to stay healthy and get the season started and hopefully finish it. But I think it's no small sacrifice, and it's an indication. I think it came from Mike McCarthy and the leadership council that has been formed out there by the players.
On that? Do we know?
I don't know everybody who's on it now. I mean, Jason Garrett had that too, so that doesn't guarantee anything better than 8-8, having a leadership council. But
we've had some pretty fine.
You know, Witten was part of it. Travis Frederick was part of it, so they're obviously not here. So I assume they've been replaced, unless they've just lowered the number. But I think it's a great sign that they took this initiative and the players committed to doing this, or they've committed to this point to doing it. Let's see if they honor it, because there are a lot of establishments that are open out there within walking distance. Just regular restaurants that we go to all the time when we're covering the team. And that would defeat the whole purpose.
Are you saying some of those are closed right now?
No. I'm saying they're open and they're readily available. And so if you get tired of eating every meal at neighborhood services, I don't think that would happen to me.
Yeah.
But it might happen to them. Then they might be tempted to walk down the street, and there's plenty of places that are open that would sort of work against the whole thing they've established here.
Where do you think the Vegas Raiders could quarantine? Like the Venetian? Where do you think there's
Caesars?
Caesars, is that a good place to quarantine? So the other thing, there was one other thing I wanted to mention about Dak, and it's this. The contract was brought up, and Steven explained some things, but Jerry really put a lot of it in and said, hey, he said, I think the world of him and praised him like crazy, and said, hey, this is a sign of how much confidence he has. He basically turned down.
He's a man of conviction. He believes in himself, and that's what makes him a great player.
Are you buying, though, this whole COVID thing when they start saying, oh, we don't know what the economics are going to be a year from now, because the Chiefs obviously went out, and I know they have a different situation, but still, they got a 10-year deal for $45 million a year, got it done, and they weren't sitting there like, oh, my gosh, the COVID-19 was not allowing us to do something with our quarterback.
I think the only player, I think Dak is counting at $31.4 million, I think he's counting 17% against the Cowboys cap. The only player since 2006, the only quarterback since 2006 who's counted more against his team's cap and made the Super Bowl was Matt Ryan with Atlanta. So what they're doing is difficult to put a good enough team around a player counting that much against the cap himself is an enormous challenge. I think it's understandable and logical that when you're dealing with this, the coronavirus, the way it's affected businesses, the uncertainty about whether you're going to play at all, whether you're going to play through the season, whether you're going to have fans and the revenue that comes with that, whether you're going to have TV money. I mean, I think that's a fair point that you don't know, you know, what your budget's going to be. But what they've done now, it's going to be worse next year. Next year, because here's why. So the cap depends upon revenue that the Cowboys and other teams make. That's what determines what the cap is. It's a percentage of that. But Dak's thing doesn't count. That doesn't matter. What matters is he gets 20% more than he got last year. So he's going to get nearly $37 million, and the Cowboys are going to have a lower cap in all likelihood, or a flat cap, which is going to make it harder. And then Amari Cooper counts $10 million more next year. And Zeke counts significant $8 million more next year. And so that's the puzzle that the Cowboys are going to have to solve. And that's why it's so unforgivable that they wasted the window of paying a quarterback fourth-round salaries and did nothing with it. nothing with that advantage. You know, Russell Wilson went to a Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl on their first on their rookie contracts. Those teams took advantage of the situation the Cowboys had until now. And now, by not giving in and only, because you don't want to have only 4 years with Dak, I don't see how having only 1 year is better. Because now you're committed to paying a quarterback at the top of the scale for as long as he wants. And every year he gets closer to free agency.
Yeah.
But you're paying him at the top of the quarterback scale, and all of it counts against the cap. It's a horrible situation the Cowboys are in.
It is, and you gotta almost admire the backbone of Dak and his agent because you know Jerry and Steven at some point made the points you just made. You're putting us in a horrible spot. We want to take care of you. We want to make you one of the top paid quarterbacks in the game, right up there in the top three or four quarterbacks, and we're going to take care of you, and you're going to be a Cowboy for life.
And we're going to have the resources to build a competitive team around you.
Put it right around you. Yeah.
But if I'm him, I say, well, you had more than that opportunity the last 4 years, and you didn't do it.
I think that's fair. Now, you said they didn't do anything. They did come close.
To a Super Bowl?
To making an NFC title game. They came very close in that game against Green Bay. I mean, Dak led them back. It was a very, very close game.
Are you talking about when they lost on the Rodgers miracle pass?
No. Later than that.
Not the Dak play.
Dak's rookie. Yeah, he threw those. He threw those interceptions, and then he led them back. I'm saying,
you're saying that was almost a Super Bowl year
from the NFC title game. Oh, this team, if they got an NFC title, you would do a parade. You would. I mean, after all these years in the wilderness.
I didn't attend any of their parades when they won the Super Bowl, so I think you're wrong on
wasn't
that.
Wasn't there one that lost some chaos? Broke out a lot of fights and that kind of thing. Okay.
Well, I can't imagine our society would do any such thing.
Oh, stop.
Back in the good old days.
that's right. It was, there was a pretty eventful parade. All right. Let's continue down this path though. There's one other thing I wanted to bring up, and there's a piece of audio we need to hear about this. This is Jerry. To me, this is Ringmaster Jerry. This is, we're the Dallas Cowboys. We are here for America. We are America's team. In this void and in this depression that we're all in, we will step into that void.
We'll inspire America.
And let's hear, this is Jerry talking about that.
It's very important to understand how fabulous that the NFL has evolved to where we are such a premier part of the economic scene and of the scene of providing that entertainment really chiefly through television. And of course, we have developed a lot of stadium to help that as well. But it has created an entertainment that it is important to everyone concerned, the future of players. It's important to the futures of coaches. It's important to everybody concerned that what we do right now is put the show on. Just from that standpoint, put the show safe, absolutely safe. But prudent to step out here and make this happen, I don't know of anyone at any level in this league. I will start with the staff here. I will go to our players here. I will go to the league as a whole, the owners. I don't know of anybody in the league that you see at a training camp and involved here that doesn't realize how important it is to us to have a season and have these games on. And our fans will benefit from that. That's being motivated, but that's what's at play here. And the way to get this done and how to get the show out here so that we can put these games on and have a Super Bowl champion, all of that is very, very critical from that standpoint. What drives it? The interest that we have from fans all over the country. This should be a great time. It makes our future if we can solve this problem and do what we want to do here. It really adds to what I want to be a part of for our fans and fans of football in the future. So it's very important that we realize that everybody realizes, let's do what it takes. Let's be diligent about it. There's a lot at stake here to put these games on.
All right. And I just think that the imagery and the drama that he brings when he says something like, I like his sense of the moment. When he says something about, we're going to put the show on. I mean, that to me, that was, I think most people thought the kneeling and talking about all that was a big, you know, that was the biggest part of it. And maybe from a news standpoint, it was. But to me, the greatest Jerry moment, the most quintessential Jerry moment was the, we're going to put the show on.
And what about on the day that the Washington football team announces they're not going to have any fans at home this year, which that's not unusual anymore. I think they ranked in the 28th or worse the last 5 years in attendance. And the day that the Masters announces that they're not going to have people in the galleries, Jerry's talking about, hey, we're going to play our whole season and we're going to have our fans there. Now, in what numbers, we don't know. But he talked about how the air currents when the both ends of the stadium are opened up create a better environment, a healthier environment in the COVID era. He talked about while they're going to honor whatever you know the local protocols and limitations are, that, hey, we have a 3 million square foot stadium. We got more suites.
Art.
We can bring people in and all these different entry points, and they won't interact with one another, and they're going to operate in pods. I mean, he's talking pretty big in terms of, sounds like to me like, hey, I got a 100,000 seat stadium. The state says I can put 50,000, I can fill it half full, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that that's the case.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, in Texas, most universities, University of Texas, 25,000. Baylor announces today 25% capacity is what they've come up with, which back in the day when we were really bad at Baylor, that was a pretty good day. That was not a bad crowd.
25% in the crowd.
We did. Today, though, they announced, by the way, you know, we had taken care of all our season tickets like usual. My family's kind of, we have six here, two here, two here, spread out throughout the stadium. And they made the announcement just kind of they didn't lead with this. Down toward the bottom of it, it said, here's what we're going to do this year. Everybody who has season tickets, those season tickets are going to be deferred to next season, and this year it'll be single game tickets, and the season ticket holders will have first dibs on those season tickets. But they're basically like, we're going to take your money. We already taken your money for this year, and we're gonna shove that to next year. So what they've done is they're trying to create another revenue stream. So I don't know. Sounds like Jerry's involved. Sounds like something Jerry.
Well, that's what they're doing. They're not having any season ticket sales this year either. They're all single game tickets, but you can have your season tickets. You get first opportunity to repurchase your tickets next year.
What do your season tickets for this year mean?
You get priority next year to buy the same ones. But there are no single game or there's no.
Can you get a refund if you want it?
I don't think they've offered refunds. I could be wrong on that. I've never sat in the stands and cheered the Cowboys.
Ed.
I think other people in the media have. I've not.
Yes, it happens. There's supposed to be no cheering in the press box, but from time to time, it does happen. Ed, any final thoughts as we wrap up this special training camp edition of the Doomsday Podcast? Frito, how long have we gone so far? Are we to the hour mark? Wow, we're closing in on 1 hour. A very special time that we've all gotten back together. And Ed, closing thoughts from you.
Well, the one thing we didn't talk about was the other point Dak made was how much he endorses the CeeDee Lamb pick at 17 overall. He said that great guy, great athlete, excited for his future, excited for now, smart, talented, wants to learn. And thinks he's going to play a big role in deciding, you know, how they perform this year. But other than that, I don't really have.
Are you glad we were
phenomenal closing thought?
We were able to nail down who's been working first team center and left guard. Were you listening when that was going on?
I did, yeah. Joe Looney
is
working at center.
But boy,
and then McGovern and Connor Williams are at guard.
McCarthy already has had about enough of Clarence. Clarence was reiterating, but who's taking center? And he's like, I just said
that. You know, I think Mike did create the impression that Joe Looney. Is it Looney?
Yeah.
I thought it was had an odd pronunciation despite the spelling. Anyway.
I was thinking about a former Rays player named James Looney.
Yeah, I know who he is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think Mike did create the false impression that he was playing at guard, and because I was wondering who was playing center then, too. Because obviously they drafted a rookie who plays there from Wisconsin, but again, tough position to learn with no offseason and no preseason games. I mean, you think about it. Mike McCarthy, you know, he took a year off. He's been out of the game for a year. And now he comes back to the league and he loses. I talked about the advantages that they were supposed to have. I mean, you're supposed to, when you make a coaching staff change, you start your offseason program 2 weeks ahead of everybody else. They lost that. They were then supposed to report to camp earlier than everybody else because they were playing in the Hall of Fame game. And so they were supposed to have 5 preseason games, and now they have none. I mean, Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator, are going to be seeing their guys in game speed for the first time on week one.
Other than the blue-white scrimmage.
I didn't see the blue-white scrimmage on the list of daily
events. I've been invited to that.
I think you're going to have a front row to that.
The blue-white
scrimmage. What about Friday?
This coming Friday?
Yeah.
Still kind of up in the air.
First practice.
What do you know what time
it's going to be? First media access. 8 o'clock. 8 a.m.
I'm not going.
The routine is Mike McCarthy speaks at 7:15.
In the morning.
Yes. Play. Then they practice from 8 to 10. And then there's some kind of player availability via conference call. And then
I'll be on that.
We're out of the building by 1, which is just about time you'd normally show up.
Yeah, this sounds like the worst training camp ever. 8 a.m. Yeah.
7:15 for McCarthy.
All my pleas to be out there for this. Well, the 7:15 will happen via Zoom as well.
Yeah.
So, like, the media will be out there at the place, like, in their cars.
If you want to go to practice, you'll have to be already
on the
there.
On phone with him.
Right.
This is so lame. But, I mean, this is it, man. We're just learning how to live.
Here's what we have
in
to
the
hope.
Age of the corona.
As bad as this is, we have to hope that this doesn't become the norm whenever this thing is over with. That teams love just doing everything on the phone. They love reporters not being in the locker room during the week. They love reporters not being in the locker room after the games. I'll tell you what, though. I think Jerry Jones is going to be the most disappointed man in America when he steps outside that locker room post-game week one and there's nobody there to talk to him. He's used to having about 100 reporters around him.
Fisher will find a way.
It'll be good for Mike McCarthy.
You think Mike will appreciate it not having
I think he won't know. He'll probably not find out till year two, when hopefully he experiences a more normal situation post-game.
What it's like.
He'll then have an appreciation for what he had his rookie year here in Dallas.
Is Mike, where's Mike from? Where'd he grow
Pittsburgh.
Up?
Pittsburgh. He's a Pittsburgh guy.
I've been thinking, getting in my head, like a Mike McCarthy imitation, and I think I could get it, but I'd have to hear him get to talk. He's just, they do not let that guy talk.
Today was not a day to start developing that.
Hey, Ed Warner, how you doing? How are you doing? I mean, he's got a real kind of, it is a Pittsburgh kind of, hey, it's good. Hey, Dalrymple, can you get Ed Warner in here for a one-on-one?
Deep gravelly kind
of. Yeah, it is good to be. I miss Green Bay. We lived up there with the family. We did a farm situation, and I had a training camp. We had a bunch of big analytics, a bunch of nerds up there, but I loved it. All right, it is the Doomsday Podcast. Say goodnight, Ed.
Goodnight, Ed.
Good night from Far North Dallas, Frito Nation Productions. Good night, everybody. But whoa. We do have some breaking news before we go.
An encore. We're doing an encore.
Yeah, an encore performance because as we were taping, the news broke that Everson Griffin, a veteran pass rusher, been with the Minnesota Vikings for a long time. Played at USC, has had 74 career sacks, and the Cowboys have signed him, continuing to bring in all sorts of aging veterans. 32 years old, coming off an 8-sack season with the Vikings. He was out there. There was apparently, Ed, a tug-of-war between the Vikings and the Seahawks because Pete Carroll used to coach him at USC, and the Cowboys kind of snuck in and said, hey, how about we bring you in, and he has a one-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys. Welcome to town, Everson Griffin.
Now, Everson Griffin, it needs to be said, has had some significant off-the-field issues. In fact, I believe, like Alden Smith, he has lived in a sober house at some point in his career. So that bears monitoring, especially in a pandemic year. Here's what's interesting to me about it. Everson Griffin lined up as a right defensive end for 91.5% of his snaps the last 2 years and had all 13 of his 13.5 sacks from that position. DeMarcus Lawrence lined up at left defensive end for 91% of the snaps the last 2 years and had all 15.5 of his sacks from that spot. So that seems to solidify those two spots. And importantly, to me, it makes the Cowboys less dependent on Alden Smith as he comes back. You know, he hasn't played in the NFL since 2015. I mean, you think about it, Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott have played their entire careers to this point since he was last on the field, and it was with the Raiders in a partial season. I don't think he's played more than half the defensive snaps for his team since 2012. So now they're not as dependent on him. And if anybody on that football team, a veteran, needed preseason games to acclimate himself and practice snaps, it would be Alden Smith, and those are largely gone. And so this is a good move just on its own in terms of the player and his ability. Obviously, he's going to need to be managed, and the Cowboys have done that often. They do, I know, talking to somebody over there just now, consider him, quote-unquote, a great pass rusher. And, of course, we don't know what's going to happen with Randy Gregory. He still hasn't been reinstated from his indefinite suspension. So now they're not quite as tied into Alden Smith and Randy Gregory as they were before the signing. And wow. I mean, you talk about in the offseason, we thought the Cowboys were really exposed on the defensive line. But now they got, Gerald McCoy is a veteran, 10-year veteran. Donatari Poe is an accomplished veteran who played with McCoy, next to McCoy, in Carolina last year, the majority of the snaps. And now you got Alden Smith, if he can come back like the Cowboys think he can, and Everson Griffin is a proven player.
So Poe, McCoy, Griffin, and Alden Smith, all of them over the age of 30, all of them at one point in time have been extremely productive players. And you're right, it does create more opportunities.
Now, they played a lot of snaps together, I mentioned, in Carolina, but not everybody in the league, not all the defensive coordinators in the league are that impressed with Poe and McCoy. One coordinator saying, they're good players, but to me, they've always played when they want to play. So they're going to have to be pushed into this. Now, Jim Tomsula is known for being able to do that. So if that's the case, then the Cowboys might have a pretty good defensive line.
Oh, man, this is... What's that thing Eric Ogbagu used to say? What was the?
We must protect this house.
We must protect this sober house.
There goes your Friday access. Say good night, Matt.
Good night. I'm out of here. Peace out.